Welcome to Stu's EV Universe, where you can find anything and everything electric vehicle. Today I have the pleasure of having Jason Hill, who's Aptera's Chief of Design, on the podcast. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you, Stuart. It's good to be here.
Yeah, and actually, we've had you on before. You were here in, I believe it was February, earlier this year. So I'm excited about having you on again. I think it was the one and only podcast that we actually split it up into two parts, which was really kind of cool because we had so much to talk about. But for those that, and I'm sure there are still a few folks out there that aren't familiar with what Aptera is, let's start there and just kind of do a brief, what is Aptera?
Sure, thank you. This is a fairly well-practiced description. Aptera is a uniquely designed and engineered vehicle that gives a focus on efficiency. Very simply, we take a small amount of grid energy and we use that extremely efficiently to give you mobility, and we supplement it with a meaningful amount of solar energy for free. And we're in year three of the mission, and we're edging closer each week, each month, to the start of production. Still a long way to go, but our vehicle represents all the optimism of technology and good design, good engineering.
Now, you know, I mentioned earlier, I did speak to you in February. Where is Aptera now compared to when we last spoke? I mean, have there been, what have you all been up to?
A variety of things, most concentrated on what we call closing the design, but also finishing up all the design for manufacturing details. That's at the one end, and at the other end, we are currently validating or have validated all the main tools for the body structure, the body in carbon, or we call it a BINC. And those tools, those parts, and that assembly launch production line is being set up in Modena, Italy with our partner CPC.
One thing that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and I think a lot of folks have been thinking a lot about lately, both automotive manufacturers as well as consumers, is affordability. So there's been a lot of news lately with Tesla. You know, rates are high. You know, some people can afford to pay cash for their vehicles, but there's a large percentage of folks that need to finance. So Elon Musk has been talking a lot about the importance of keeping the cost of the vehicle down and affordability so that, you know, no other, I don't think there's any other way of saying this, but like inviting everybody to the party. You know, I think like with most technologies, kind of starts out for the few, you know, and maybe the few that can afford it. And then the whole hope is that relatively quickly we can invite everybody to the party. So a lot of talk about affordability. Are there unique ways that Aptera is addressing that? Is that something that you all are thinking about in this environment?
Absolutely. I mean, from the macroeconomic standpoint, we recognize, you know, the inflationary environment and what that's done to all things. At the other end, from the start, part of the ethos is a simplicity in the manufacturing, which allows us to get a much higher value product at either a commensurate or lower than expected price point. So a lot of that has to do with the way the vehicle is designed to be assembled, and also part of the process, like removing the paint process, or about 98% of the traditional vehicle paint processes. So overall, that's one of the drivers for that affordability. At the same time, we want to offer, as you said, the maximum value product, right? MVP, maximum value product, not minimum. And we want to maximize the experience through all of the good engineering and good design. So regardless of our price point, the value is reflected in the experience. This is the major lever that we have as we scale. With scale comes good economies. We will pay in the beginning more for certain things that go in the vehicle, but as time goes, those costs start to go down. So it starts to pare everything into a much more affordable range. I was explaining the other day, because somebody was asking about, you know, the price point of things, and I reminded them that some years ago I paid probably $4,000 or $5,000 for a flat screen TV, and then 3 years later I paid $3,000 for the same size or a little bit bigger but much better, and pretty soon it was $1,000 for that flat screen TV that was even bigger and even better. So there is a time span that we have to, you know, be aware of. We also were very much pleased to see kind of the next phase of manufacturing in a traditional automotive sense coming from Tesla. And what I mean by pleased is that it wrote out and validated exactly what we're doing. In some ways, we're half a step ahead of where they're heading with that affordability. Now, scale is a different matter, right? They have the scale to push out hundreds of thousands. We've got to go from the hundreds to the thousands and then see where the market will take us.
Yeah, and they're doing things, you know, we just heard about the Cybertruck, which is hard to, you know, ignore in the news. It's everywhere. And the fact that it's such a kind of quote-unquote radical new design with new processes for manufacturing, like the gigapress and all that, it's going to take some time, and it's going to be expensive. So, is that something like you all are looking at as far as, you know, manufacturing something that is absolutely brand new?
We are manufacturing a new product, but we're applying an existing methodology to make the parts. And it's very clear, I've described it this way. We're doing with composites and the type of tools that Tesla's doing with gigacastings and metals. And it's very much in line with the bigger the part, the bigger the tool. In fact, we're using not IDRA presses, but the tools that go in the IDRA presses are made by a company called CoStamp. They help design our tools, and another division of CoStamp is actually doing all of our plastics for interior and some of the exterior panels. But again, with this methodology of the waffle iron, where you put the material in, heat and pressure presses the part out, and then you validate that part, you trim it, and then you attach it to its co-part. We get an extremely robust body that won't twist and won't rust. So there's an economy of the manufacturing process where we also need about 30% the floor space, 30 to 35% of the floor space just to assemble the vehicle, compared to, you know, if you did a same similar size vehicle in a more traditional manner.
That's really interesting. And again, with the theme of affordability, what's interesting to me, one of the things that's interesting to me is, like, I've always put a lot of time and thought into, what about those folks that don't have the luxury of being able to charge at home? So the folks that are in houses that only have, you know, on-street parking and apartments and condos, and it seems that a vehicle that incorporates solar in a big way can address that in a way. And there is an affordability, and it will get an EV into those people's hands. And if they only have a relatively short commute, and if they can find their spot in the sun when they drive to work, if they're working, you know, at a facility or wherever, their car is in effect, you know, basically being charged while they're sitting there in the parking lot. So that's exciting to me, you know, again, kind of looking at affordability.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're working on, let me give you kind of a spectrum of what you're talking about. We're working on the user interface for the for the center display. At the same time, we're developing the app. The key feature for Aptera is to be able to immediately tie the benefit of solar to the user in a very forward and entertaining way. So you won't have to search for this information. It'll always be there. The on the other end of the spectrum is what you said about the affordability and about location. We'll be able to mitigate a lot of those risks or those fears because of the amount of energy that's just coming into the vehicle, whether it's parked in full sun or partial sun or shade or whatever. You're still going to get something. When you do plug it in and you use, let's say, just a 110 outlet, not a dedicated EV charger, the amount that you can pull in from a 110 is much larger because we don't need as much energy. So over time, in a typical, let's say, one night, I think 8 or 10 hours, Chris Anthony made the calculation, it's around 150 miles that you can put into the vehicle just from a 110. So now you look at the level 2 or level 3 chargers and imagine instead of 30 minutes for a 150 kilowatt pack, because we only have 42 kilowatts, you can gain much more over a shorter period of time. So there starts to become that all the advantages of the efficiency. The sun aspect, like I said, is really going to be the differentiator. And we had the experience recently where we've been bench testing all the panels for over a year now, but now we've got the vehicle with the panels and the energy going in. So one of our engineers did a spirited test drive, and by the time he came back, he noted the amount of energy, and it was almost the same as when he left. Now, that's a combination of our regen and the solar, but even he was kind of surprised, let's say, like, wow, this really works. And it wasn't a large amount, but it was enough to make the difference of I went somewhere and I came back with the same amount of energy. And that, when we scale that up and we have those first moments when users and customers are experiencing that, that's going to be where, you know, kind of the clouds part and the sun gets really bright for us.
Well, and so we're talking about, you know, the benefit of the solar aspect of the vehicle. What about locations that are less sunny than California, like Kentucky? I mean, you know, we've been here for, I think, almost 20 years now, but I think in our first few years, the winters can be awful gray. How does that, you know, impact a vehicle like Aptera?
Sure, an excellent point. You have to remember that without the solar, you still have massive efficiencies in aerodynamics, weight, friction, all of that. So that because we're so efficient there, when you do add the solar, it is a meaningful amount. But when you take it away, let's say, you still have the most efficient platform from the other metrics. So there's really, it's kind of two ways to win, let's say. And there are, we're very cognizant that there are locations where there's minimal or less sun. It's not as consistent. But we still find a good attraction from people who are interested in the vehicle, regardless of their, let's call it, weather.
Now, so Aptera is a three-wheeled vehicle.
Correct.
And I don't know what it's like in California because it's been a while since I've been there. But every once in a while, I would say very rarely, we will see a three-wheeled vehicle on the roads here, you know, in the better weather. I think you know what vehicles I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like hot roddy kind of vehicles, kind of really showy. But historically, you know, I kind of think back and, you know, Buckminster Fuller had the Dymaxion vehicle I guess in the time there was probably a lot of excitement for that until it didn't, you know, gain traction. But why has it been harder for three-wheeled vehicles to gain mass acceptance, except, you know, for things like scooters and, you know, unicycles that are electric and, you know, a few other kind of short-range vehicles, all of our vehicles have four wheels.
Well, they do, and you rightly pointed out there's a lot of other vehicles in different categories that either have two, three, four, even six wheels. It's, if we look at more, not the daily transportation needs, but the more aspirational weekend and recreational. And the thing to understand is how many people pay a lot of money for these UTVs or these road-going three-wheel vehicles that are more open motorcycle types. And you start to realize that the market, while we want to compare it to the scales of an auto company or an automotive market space, that's really not where Aptera is, or we can get there eventually with a different type of product. But we've got to start with the maximum efficiencies that come with the three-wheel design and carve out and start a new market segment. Because if you start combining or putting the Aptera into one category, and we know people will do it, it just doesn't fit. It's right. Not the thing that you can compare to. So once you kind of remove that and you focus in on all the attributes of the vehicle, the value, and its utility aspect, it becomes much more than the thing that you park next to your house and take out on the weekend, or the thing that you want to go, you know, you don't have to trailer it anywhere to share a weekend of recreation. The vehicle becomes much more of a daily tool, right? And that's where we're most beneficial, is that it moves from the recreational part to the daily use case.
Yeah, and that's interesting, like kind of just thinking, obviously, you know, your background is design. So I've been thinking a lot lately about what makes for good lasting design, because following the automotive industry and companies like Tesla, you know, again, Cybertruck, was you know, shown to the public years ago. And it's finally, the end of November, going to be, you know, available in very limited quantities, but to the public. And they're going to hand the keys out to folks. But it just seems like it takes a lot of time from concept to producing a vehicle. And it almost seems like something can feel outdated rather quickly as far as the design because of that lapse of time, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, is that a function of, I mean, will good design be good design? I mean, will the Tesla Model 3 always be considered good design, even though now they're kind of tweaking it a little bit and making it a little different in this sort of, you know, next generation or evolution of it? Or is it perhaps just an indication of the fast-paced world we're living in, where we get tired of things very quickly? I mean, what makes for good lasting design?
These are all excellent, excellent points and observation. Of course, there's a subjective aspect that says, well, you know, universally that's accepted as good, but you can find plenty of people that say, well, I don't like the appeal of that. I'll ask you, if you close your eyes, can you picture the new Stellantis Ram full-size pickup?
Yes.
Generically, but you cannot unsee the Cybertruck.
Right.
And we're not in the, oh, that's a category of vehicle, sedan, pickup, minivan.
Right.
The Cybertruck, the fact that people think it's a pickup truck, or the fact that it has utility of a pickup truck, is a whole nother discussion around, you know, market segments. Yep. Same for Aptera. You can't unsee it. It's unique to its own way, let's say. Cybertruck has that power, whether you like it or not. You cannot unsee it. Evergreen products like Aptera, where, and this was the challenge when I was invited back to Aptera and said, hey, we're gonna relaunch and do this, I was like, great, we can really improve the overall design and let's say advance it. And the more I got into it, the more I realized actually the design is not going to change. What's going to change is the implementation around the around its manufacturability. And we're going to update, let's say, the details, the clothing, but the body is the same. But there is some advances in material, and now we have the solar, so that changes the look. So all the way back 3.5 years ago, the first exercise was the integration of the solar. But if you even when you remove the solar, you still have a foundational body and these, you know, wheels, and it gives you that lasting design statement. One of the best rewarding parts about the my job and design in general is when you're collaborating with the engineers and you want to achieve an effect that's maybe for efficiency of cost, efficiency of manufacturing, material, whichever it is. And the result is a kind of stylistic feature, as opposed to most auto companies are set in a market formula so that they're attacking stylistic features first. But with something like our product, the style comes after. It's a secondary effect. It's not the primary driver. Of course, there's some balance in there. We want to make sure that visually there's a harmony of all the elements. One excellent example that was a real success, and it was confirmed on my recent trip to Italy, was seeing the Carbon SMC hatch, the single piece that will allow the solar panel to be bonded to it, and that's your hatch. You put two gas struts, your hinges, so it's a single piece of carbon fiber. Now, normally, something like that would take two pieces plus a cover, or you would wrap it in a material or whatever you would do. Our hatch is exposed, therefore the structural requirements of the strength, especially as it relates to torsional stiffness, it was designed in by using a 3D pattern which mimics the solar cell pattern layout. In fact, the size of the pillows is exactly the same. And then working with the engineers to get the strength requirement, we ended up with a panel that was much lighter than they could have done by just putting different type of box sections on it. So that's what I mean by the style results from good design, and good design is good engineering hand in hand.
Well, it's like form follows function, I suppose.
Correct.
Which is also interesting. I was thinking earlier today that, you know, there are all these announcements about these different legacy car companies adapting, you know, Tesla's standard for North America, you know, the charging standard plug. And I believe Aptera was the first to kind of get on board with that, which was very forward thinking. And again, I've experienced both. I've driven a Tesla on trips, and I've driven my Bolt on trips. And the Tesla plug is a lot not only nicer to aesthetically, but it's also much easier to use. And so there's it seems like Aptera kind of very naturally follows that kind of, you know, form follows function kind of thought.
Correct. And let's break down the whole NACS and the whole let's call it charging experience. And it was very clear that there was two dynamics from my point of view. One is there is no standard X years ago, and two is if you start with the standard, you're leaving out the user. But if you start with the user, you're naturally going to get to the right place where it's like, how convenient do I need this? How elegant can I make this? This is the design process that we go through on everything. So what we did with our charger was we took the risk, and the co-founders and myself were very adamant that we want this Tesla charger. And we got a lot of pushback, like we have to package for CCS and all this other stuff, and you need a J1772 or whatever. I'm like, I don't even want to hear it. I'm not an engineer, but it's like, I don't want to hear it. If we have any chance at all to get the elegance of this system, we should take it. So we stuck with that. Then that was the first thing we did. We committed to it and we never wavered. The second thing was Chris Anthony put out and organized the change.org petition that was like, hey, make this the standard. Before they called it the North American Charging Standard, that petition was made to say, hey, and we didn't do it to really get it the standard. We did it so we could get the attention so that it would help us to get or to be able to use it selfishly, right? And the other thing that I'll note right now is I've watched this industry, I've watched the legacy industry build excuses for a decade while Tesla was building a product and a charging system. And I knew when the announcement about the EA and how that was going to be implemented, they left the user out again. It was all about the contract and the and everything. And you can see how robust one system is versus another because no one really owns it. It was a pass through and they left the user literally out of it. So back to the our choice, then you got the traction that says, okay, we're going to brand. Now we've not had so much interaction with Tesla, but they made the announcement at one point like, okay, North American Charging Standard, NACS. And then it took one domino to fall. And most likely all these companies in theory, they think about it and they're like, we don't need to do that. And then somebody goes and experiences both sides or of the spectrum of charging. And they realize like, it's right here. Why we don't need to fight this. So I'm really pleased to see part of the industry kind of go, okay, that's just helpful overall. So let's go there. But you're correct. You know, we saw where it was going and we tried really hard to get there. And we did. We got there before anybody else.
Well, that kind of brings up a thought that's a really interesting thought is like, when is it beneficial to go it alone, you know? And when is it beneficial to partner? I mean, has there been any thought about, you know, I can't fathom the amount of work and time and effort and money that goes into starting a automobile company. Has there been any thought about, you know, maybe partnering on a deeper level with like a Tesla or something like that? It seems like they would have resources. And the whole idea of Tesla was to really speed up the adoption of cleaner vehicles for a cleaner world. You know, I'm not saying that you become Tesla, but, you know, maybe some sort of a deeper collaboration. You know, I guess you can kind of make the argument that, you know, these companies are now partnering with Tesla for this charging standard. Is that beneficial? You know, I mean, is it sometimes better to go it alone because it keeps the ideas perhaps more pure? I don't know.
Well, let's unpack that a little bit. I mean, there's a lot of aspects that are important to Aptera that do not conflict with, let's say, a legacy company in the auto space, whether it's EV or otherwise. At the other end, you have the open patents, as long as they're applied to an electric vehicle, from the largest EV pioneer and market share leader. We've had several discussions with a variety of both automotive and non-automotive companies that are either in a more recreational space or a more industrial space or a more, you know, the one we're trying to get to next is the solar space. Because we have a lot of value in the work that we've done, which would help a lot of the solar aspects of several other, let's call them industries and applications. So we are absolutely open to a kind of partnership and tie up where it's been mutually beneficial. I live this every day, but when I think about our scale, it doesn't really. It's not comparable to an existing automaker or market space, right? We've got to focus on the robustness and the delivery of the vehicle, and then see how big we can make the market space, which is our own. It's not, you know, and then we can enter, or then we can look at what does it take to bring all those great attributes to an existing marketplace or an existing, sorry, market segment. And is it then beneficial? And is it then, do you need your go it alone or do you need a partner? And what I'm talking about big picture is if we were to develop a four-wheel vehicle with all the Aptera brand ethos and attributes, what does that look like? How long does that take? What kind of capital is required? So this is a really good way for us as a company and a product to kind of be unique, be separate, and not fall under the weight or fall into the pitfalls of what your automotive startups are doing. Right? Now we're very close to, let's say, a daily experience that is like a car, but that's really not, we're really not at all in that market space. We're going into a blue ocean, and we're creating, and we have the validation of tens of thousands of people that are like, I want that. I want it, and I want it the way I want it. So it becomes a really good magnet for, and I've used this metaphor before, products like ours are, it's either a mirror that reflects back fears or let's say assumptions, or it's a canvas. And that canvas becomes, I can see myself doing these things with that. It then becomes, you paint all the attributes of what you believe in, the free power from the sun, the efficiency in aerodynamics, the lightweight, the nimbleness and the swiftness of the driving experience. All of these things that we start to really maximize in an Aptera become valuable to each and every individual user. So it never bothers me. In fact, it's quite a bit of our strength that some people look at a vehicle like Aptera and go, oh, that's silly, I can't do that. But others look at it and go, huh, that's really interesting. That's really cool. And we get this constantly. We were at an event this past week with some investors and internet marketing people and a lot of startups, a lot of VC. It was fascinating to meet some of these people and get their initial impressions of the vehicle. And once you answer like the first two questions, they kind of open up and say, oh, I didn't think of that. Wow, solar this way? But you only have to plug it in for this much time? So you can, like, they started doing the calculations once they realized, okay, it's something more than a car. It's something different. And then they understood it. And watching people open up to that is pretty amazing, especially when they're investors and in the VC world, like, okay, I'm gonna introduce you to some people kind of thing.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about vehicles that you can almost equate it to thinking about what you choose to wear. You know, vehicles have really become, and it's not a new thing, it's been going on for decades, a statement, the type of vehicle, you mentioned the Dodge Rams, a statement, it could be a political statement, which is weird that, you know, there is a lot of that, especially in this part of the country. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of pushback on even the thought of electric vehicles. And it is something where people are, not everybody, but yeah.
In those, I think what I enjoy about that is like the situation you're describing says nothing about an actual EV. It says everything about the person saying or, putting their fears first. I always look for the question behind the question, or what's the fear behind that statement, right? Is it loss of something? Are you afraid to, give up something? What really drives those kind of statements? And it's pretty easy to change minds, but you have to get the door open first. And right. It's very comfortable, very human to just look at something and say, especially when you, when it's been told to you, literally programmed, like, those are bad, those are expensive, those are, you know, like, I'll use the example of, you would think that cobalt only comes from one little field dug up by children.
Right, yeah.
That's the way it's programmed. But cobalt doesn't come from just one little space or one place. And you can do that for, well, where am I going to charge? Electricity's all around us. In fact, the grid is more distributed than any petroleum fueling network is. In fact, then you go the next step where we are with, well, the sun's on half of the day, and we don't need a lot of it, and we don't need a lot of these other things. So it becomes a really interesting, you know, I like to see people reveal their, both their optimism, but also their fears through statements like that. It's pretty fascinating, let's say.
Well, and a lot of it is orchestrated and organized and
it's called
purposely,
programming for a reason.
Yeah, purposely trying to put these, like you said, fears out there, unfounded fears to a large degree, because people are waiting for that, you know, because they're looking for a reason not to dive into the pool.
They're looking for the thing that proves them, or they're looking for the thing that gives them comfort so that they can sleep at night.
Right. Now, my background's marketing, and I kind of was wondering, you know, I've seen a fair amount of public outreach from you all, and bringing the vehicle out to places, which is wonderful. There's a couple things with that I'm curious about. You know, what are the reactions when that's done? But also, is it going to, I've seen a lot of it kind of in the California area, you know, is there going to be any effort in bringing the vehicle out towards the Midwest or the East, and kind of doing a broader showing of the vehicle so people can actually see it and touch it and get in it?
Yes. The short answer and the big answer is yes, absolutely. Remember, we have to go through the right amount of validation. This means all the testing of systems, but it's designed to operate in, you know, wet and you know, not just perfect sunny conditions. It's designed to, you know, be robust in its suspension and all of its attributes, that you have a kind of a normal feeling with the vehicle. It's not so delicate. Now, as far as the marketing efforts and throughout, we have, I don't know the exact number, it's about 46,000 pre-orders. 80% of those are in North America. 80% of those in North America, and I'm including Canada, are in key markets such as California. So as a, we've got to keep the first deliveries very close, and then like spread out. But as far as the outreach before we deliver on those, yes, we need to. In fact, we're building 15 or 16 validation vehicles in different levels for the production intent builds. The first ones will be progress builds. Then we'll get to a place where we can have multiple vehicles, and those vehicles are the ones that we can then bring to more public events. We are, and I thank you for recognizing that, we are being very open about that progress, and pretty soon we'll be able to share, like, okay, you saw the parts, you saw the machines that make the parts, now these are the parts put together, and we're going to kind of bring everyone along on that so that they can see, you know, we still get like, oh, that'll never happen. It's just a 3D rendering. And our value is, well, the 3D rendering came from the same material, the same piece of data that made the tool, that made the part. Like, we're very much, we can show 3D renderings knowing that that's what it's going to be. And now we have parts that are the same. So that's kind of fun. And yeah, the marketing part, we have an extremely vocal support mechanism and community, and they're very hungry, and they're also very quick to, you know, kind of realize or get past the fears that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you all are doing a lot as far as public outreach. I know, I believe it was earlier this month, your boss, the CEO, did a Zoom thing for our friends in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And for an event that they had, which is wonderful. But there's nothing quite like actually seeing the vehicle and having it right there in person, which I.
Absolutely. It's really great to have someone visit or be somewhere with the vehicle and they're like, oh, I saw this online and now I'm seeing it in person. And that's one of the key questions that I always ask is, okay, you were aware of it. What now is your impression that you're standing next to it? And
right.
it's extremely gratifying that it's overwhelmingly positive. It's either better, bigger, something about it. They're smiling with so much interest. That's the part where we say, that's why we can do this. We're doing this for those reasons and these people, because there's enough of them that really want this vehicle. And we're trying to bring all of that. But I think you'll have the same reaction when you first see it in person, as opposed to, you know, diving into our videos and watching other people experience it. So we could look forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I am looking forward to that. And kind of moving towards that, looking forward to something. Obviously, we live in the present, and that's really what we have. But if we were to pull ourselves away from that a bit and look further out, like say look 50 years out, I mean, that's a fair amount of time. I'm wondering if the folks there have thought about what that will look like. What role, if any, you know, will automation play? Will full self-driving eventually or soon or later be achieved? AI is getting, you know, a lot of attention right now. And my wife earlier today was saying, well, where are flying cars? Is that even a thing? You know, so kind of, you know, and I know when I've visited places, you know, like probably about 12 years ago, I went with my son when he was, about 12, to Hungary. And you come back from places like that, and I've spoke to people who've gone recently to Canada, and a lot of times people will come back and say, oh my God, you know, we're just so far behind. You know, they're doing all these things that we should be doing. What is the future going to look like? Is it going to be, you know, more people walking and biking, and we're not even really going to be worrying about cars too much because of, you know, the fact that we need to get away from, you know, spewing all this stuff into the air? Will we have a lot of cars that have basic DNA in common with what you all are doing at Aptera now? I'd love to get your take. 50 years, that's a long time from now.
Sure. I mean, it is, yeah. I mean, ultimately, we begin all of this with optimism, right? We're optimistic that we can solve these issues. We're optimistic that we can steward resources and use them in a much more efficient way. I'll give you a perfect example with our carbon materials. We're taking the resource that is normally destructive and literally burnt. We're taking that material and putting it into this carbon fiber material, which then becomes the structure, which then allows it to be no rust, really strong, lightweight. And if we need to reuse that material in another application, it can be done. So we'd like to think, and then we're adding, instead of burning fuel, we're adding and creating forward energy or forward motion from the energy of the sun. So if I looked out 50 years, I can imagine all kinds of efficiency improvements across the board, whether some locations focus more on self-mobility, like you said, walking. I think there's an application for the kind of let's say, design of communities that allows for more of that, whether it's pedestrian, bicycle, human power, electric power, whichever that might be, there's so much room for efficiencies to take little incremental steps across the board until it goes parabolic, where it just becomes, we're going to look back and say, wow, were we wasteful? And I've been studying this. If you go back in the industrial age and you start to realize how inefficient we were and how much more efficient we are today as humankind, and the amount of efficiencies yet to be exploited and gained. This is why we have stellar charging, literally from the sun, and that resource is projected out, 5 or 6 billion years? So we have some time to work on all these. The other thing that I'm optimistic about is we don't see the thing that we don't see. And that this means that there's consistently a kind of new technology or new paradigm in the application of that technology that we're not accounting for. And whether that happens in 6 months or whether it happens in 6 years or 600 years, if we survive as our DNA is built to do and replicate, we constantly, on a big enough timescale, we constantly invent and exploit and exploit in a good way, new ways of doing things. So that's why I always say, like, Aptera is the future is pulling us forward, right? And it's inevitable, these things. So you might as well jump with it, towards it, rather than fight it. And now we're back to the, well, I can't see that, therefore I'm going to stay with this thing that I'm afraid somebody told me they're going to take it away from me, right? I can look at efficiencies. And by the way, there's those flying cars are called airplanes or aircraft. They're not really cars, but that's a whole nother, drone is a sound. It's not really a thing if it's a remotely piloted vehicle. So there's lots of words and things that we use to describe the thing. And we love to put in patterns. Like, the pattern is this. I recognize that pattern. I ascribe it to that. And you talked about visiting other places and a very human reaction is, why don't we do that there, right? Or why don't they do what we do here? And that's part of the mimetic evolution. All things are exchanged by memes. And it took me a while to understand. I don't mean the little, 10-second clips, but memes work because the information is transmitted and shared and it doesn't degrade, but then it gets applied in a unique way. So we're all using everybody else's, let's say, ideas. And that's the interesting part where we don't need to solve everything with this Aptera. We're very confident in our goals and our execution and how it fits in a new space, as opposed to trying to put it in an existing space. Because if we enter an existing place, what do we need? We need some cost advantage or some product advantage or some other advantage distinguished, because the competition is already there on some of those things. So we have to be very choosy on where we're going to, exploit all of our efficiencies in which market segments.
No, that's really interesting. And I mean, going from really big ideas to perhaps smaller ideas. I've been collecting Hot Wheels cars lately, and I don't see an Aptera. Is that something that you all have any?
It absolutely should be. Fun fact, before I joined Aptera, I did a series of vehicles for Hot Wheels. So if you ever find those, let me know. It shouldn't be too difficult. We do have a vendor for a scale, like a 1/43rd or one, I think so. I'm not sure of the scale. I would love to get the connections. Art Center and my automotive design background has a very strong history with Mattel and Hot Wheels, the brand. We should be able to, have that. I see that they're doing other vehicles. I enjoy every day seeing not only a lot of Lucids, but both Rivians, I see the Rivian and the BrightDrop vans. I see, you know, Teslas are one in three or two in three around here.
Right.
And even, you know, it's not wave a wand and every vehicle is now electric, but the mix is happening and it's really great to see. I see Karmas, right, which was born out of the original Fiskars. I have yet to see an Ocean and I've not seen a Cybertruck in the wild, but the fact that these are, the market is much more resilient and bigger than we think. And if manufacturing concerns can get all those things that you were talking about, affordability, then we'll find all the applications, whether it's personal or whether it's public. There's lots of need, and not just for commerce, but there's lots of just human need to go someplace and do these things. And you mentioned the big idea, which is if I can grab the sun and it moves me 3 miles without plugging in or without paying anybody, I have full agency over that now instead of tethered. So we untether. And whether, you know, back to the designs that we're going through on the user interface and user experience, I want to know right away, what did I just get by shopping for 28 minutes, right? Or enjoying a lunch with my friend or meeting up with friends. When I come back to the vehicle, I want to know right away, like, huh, look at that. That'll start to, you know, really bring something. That's our unique power there. But even back to your point, even without the sun doing some of the powering, you still have an exhilarating and efficient vehicle because of all of its other attributes.
Yeah, and you're basically having the car be its own utility, which is absolutely wonderful. Yeah.
Correct. That's the, yes, you've unlocked that part of it, which we need to do a better job of telling that story, but you found it just in through our discussion. You're like, once you realize that, it becomes, you look at the vehicle and you look at our mission in a whole different way.
Right. Right. Well, this is fascinating. I always enjoy talking to you. This is great. Do you have anything?
I appreciate the time.
Yeah. Do you have anything else that you wanted to add or before we, finish things off?
Maybe just a couple things. Like I said, I was with the vehicle at this event, and these were some very interesting, you know, tech investors. Our partnership with the Italian side, you know, designed in California, made in Italy, at least for the initial production, the launch production line, because they're ready to go, right? And then final assembly in California, where our solar panels are being made here in California. Our battery packs assemblies are going to be done here in California. So we're going to have these vehicles come together very quickly in a very efficient way. And over the next months, we'll be able to share that process, almost like you can watch it. You know, most companies are very guarded about these things, but our openness is one of our strengths. So we look forward to sharing all the little details and seeing these vehicles come together, because it gives us the authenticity that we inherently have and we want to leverage. So yeah, I'm happy to come back and do this again when we have some updates. You can probably find some new images coming very soon about where we're at, both on the inside and outside.
Any news as far as actually getting closer to release of the vehicle, or?
Not any specific news. I mean, it's the focus that we've done is to put in the right amount of effort in the right places so that once we start, we don't fail.
Right.
And what I mean by this is there's some very key case studies that you can look at about, let's say, vehicle startups, and we understand the things that you shouldn't do. At the same time, we're taking a different approach on how to really get the supply chain and the manufacturing set up and ready so that once we start, we don't end up stopping too soon, right? So that's all of the effort there. And it's once we tell that story in the future, it'll be like, oh, that makes so much sense. We'll be able to look back and go, that's why you didn't do what everyone was yelling at you to do, right?
Right.
So we look forward to that too.
No, this is great. Again, super appreciate you coming on. It's always a pleasure. So thank
you.
All
right. Thank you so much.
We will talk soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Stu's EV Universe. I would like to thank Eden Unger for creating the artwork and the music for this episode. Remember, please rate, review, subscribe, and share, as that's the only way we can continue to grow. Now you can support us on Patreon by going to patreon.com/stusevu. Remember, the EV revolution runs on your energy. I'm Stuart Unger. See you next time.